This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for November 10th, 2020. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all our podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to redcircle.com. You click the red button and you can do a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but I would like to thank our previous donors. I am one of your hosts. It's your old pal, I'm Max Beers. Joined as always by my co-host, Case Lowe. And Case, we were dreading, I don't say dreading, we were looking forward to this weekend. We were anticipating this weekend. Let's go with anticipating. We were anticipating this month. We were anticipating this weekend. But it's finally here. The Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival 2020 is this Sunday. And I'm ready to go for it. Like, it took me a little bit after Kid Destiny to get prepared for it, but now I'm just stoked and ready to go with this weekend's show.
You know, Mike, we're a part of the biggest month and arguably the busiest month in the promotion's history. And I gotta say, I'm glad I made it here, because earlier today I was taking a walk around my neighborhood. It was dark out. I went on a walk later than I normally do. And I got caught in a hellacious rainstorm about 3/4 of a mile from my apartment. Turned the corner past a Starbucks, and God let out fury towards the civilians of Chicago. And I ran home with Run, Forrest, Run type energy as lightning was crashing down all around me. It was a torrential downpour. It's the second time this year I've been caught walking in a rainstorm. It was very scary, and it's only rain, but it was terrifying, quite honestly. So I'm glad I'm alive, and I'm glad I'm here talking with you about Dragon Gate now.
You know, it's been the second wettest year on record in the upstate South Carolina, and it just seems like I thought I moved away from this stuff, but I guess my rain luck has spread to you. Have not been caught out in the rain as much up here as I would in Florida, but there's no more miserable feeling than a sudden downpour and your umbrella breaks, or you're just not expecting it, and then you're like, oh wait, I have at least a 10-minute walk at the very least to get back to where I am, and then I'm going to be drenched for the rest of the day. It's miserable. I feel for you there.
Can I say something super problematic to start this podcast?
Well, we are only 2 minutes in, so it's about time for one of us to fuck up in one way.
I am, you know, not exactly the definition of a masculine man. I have tried to rid a lot of the toxic masculinity from my life. One of my big barriers, though, umbrellas. I feel ridiculous holding on an umbrella. And I know what you're thinking. Isn't it more ridiculous to get rained on? The answer is absolutely yes. But I hate them. I hate holding an umbrella. There's something about it that makes me feel less than, and I don't like doing it at all. Now, typically, if I'm leaving my house, I'm wearing a hat, so I at least have some sort of protection there. But I am hoping one day I can cross the umbrella threshold, but I don't own one, I don't keep one with me, and I know they're one of the most useful things you can own, but I don't like them.
Dude, your mindset there, drop you in South Florida for about 1 week, and you'll bring it. If you have a book bag or messenger bag, you'll toss one in there. Like, you just get used to it. And it's one of those things that it saves you until you have, like, I remember one time I was in downtown Miami, which is very different from the Miami that most people outside of South Florida know about. Just grabbing lunch, and it was I just got a chicken chop. I was going to a Cuban place getting a chicken chop, and I was caught out in the rain, and I was only 5 blocks away, and I was like, okay, I have my umbrella, my book bag, my umbrella with me. The rain was so heavy that it turned my umbrella inside out, and I actually walked into the archive dripping and was like, guys, this is not going to be fun for me for the next few hours, but I'm going to have to do something here, and I apologize. And it was actually me trying to dry my socks because it was soaked through, and I wear work boots when I was working in the archive just because of dealing with heavy things, want to protect my feet, but it somehow soaked through there. And ever since then, I think about that whenever being caught out in the rain.
That is fair. Luckily, both times this year, I've been on walks when it started pouring out. I've been running to my house. I've been running to my home. So when I get there, I can immediately change and dry things off. But yeah, it's flawed logic, my umbrella logic. I don't say it proudly. I almost am hoping for some sort of an intervention. Maybe I need to be caught out in the rain where, I'm running my first errand of the day and I'm on a pretty tight schedule. I will eventually learn my lesson, but right now, I don't want to do it. I don't like umbrellas.
You'll get caught out in the rain one time too many, and you're like, you know what? I'll toss in my messenger bag. I'll toss it in my fanny pack. I'll have one with me. It's just, you just get over it.
I'm tossing it in my backpack. I'm not using a messenger bag. I'm not using a fanny pack. I'm tossing it in my backpack, and we are going to go on our way. And again, I know this sounds ridiculous. I sound stupid saying it, and I feel stupid saying it, but it's a mental block that I have not been able to get past.
I mean, I have a waterproof messenger bag from my time in Miami that was like made designed for messengers. It wasn't like when the hipster one. It was like, oh yeah, bike messengers did this. That a friend who was a former one. It's like, go to this brand. They use like parachute material. It will be light and won't get any rain anywhere. You have to learn to adapt to these things. And you know, I'm just going to drop you in the middle of downtown Miami and say, all right, after today, I'll give you an umbrella just because I feel like you need to experience that, and then you'll smarten yourself up about that.
That's kind of the equivalent of when New Japan wrestlers go to Canada to prepare for the G1 and they embark on the toughest training session of their entire life to get in shape for that tournament. Mike is dropping me in rain in Miami, so I will learn my lesson.
It was kind of fitting you were talking about baseball hats, because the story of Dragon Gate going into Kobe World 2020 is the story of SBK and his baseball hat. In case, as we are probably two of the biggest baseball cap aficionados, enthusiasts that you will hear in wrestling podcasts, what are your thoughts about the SBK hat?
You know, America has been going through some changes. For so long, the red baseball hat was a sign of excellence. It was a sign of combining rap and rock into a sound that was truly magnificent. When Fred Durst was staying fitted, New Era committed, and his red hat was getting a rap from these critics, it was cool to wear a red hat. And Mike, I don't know if you followed politics at all, but something happened about 4 or 5 years ago where all of a sudden it became incredibly uncool to wear red hats out in the open. And maybe SBK, Kento Kabune, missed that message, but every time I see him with that red hat on, I think that dude's wearing a Trump hat. And it's unsettling until I read the font and I see SBK, and then I realize, oh, he's kind of just in his edgelord phase right now.
You know, I find the SBK hat and how proud he is wearing it very, very charming. Like, he starts wrestling matches with a hat on. He'll get mad when he gets knocked off, and then eventually 10 minutes in, he'll finally get rid of the hat. He's just really proud of it, and I find that really kind of funny.
It's objectively better, and I do say this to solely get under people's skin, it is objectively better than Naito wrestling with a hat on. I just think Kento Kabune is better at it.
Well, he has a certain joie de vivre that Naito in his cold, dead eyes does not have.
Naito in his cold, dead matches as well.
Ho-ho! But we have some stuff to get into this week that weren't necessarily cold, dead matches. We had two televised shows this week before we get into our Kobe World preview. So they had their monthly Korakuen show and an appearance in the friendly confines of KBS Hall. We know what we're here for this week. Y'all want to hear a big, in-depth, the best preview that you'll ever hear about Kobe World 2020. So we're going to go through these cards, give our big takes from 11-5 and 11-7, and then we're going to spend most of this episode giving the time it deserves. It is the big show. It is the big match, as Dragon Gate likes to put it, coming up this Sunday. So, Case, unless you had any other notes, let's get into these quick recaps.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so Corkin Hall was on November 5th. This is part of the Gate of Evolution Tour. Attendance slightly down, 668 versus 685. Case and I talked a little bit before the show about how we're going to be doing these. Our real takes are going to start as we get into the meat of the cards. But, Case, if there's anything from these first three matches you want to point out as I'm going, just feel free to jump in. And starting the show, we had a singles match. It was the remaining rookies of Takeda Kamei and Madoka Kakuta losing to BB Hulk and Takashi Yoshida. Kamei got took the fall in 10 minutes and 25 seconds with Yoshida's release powerbomb. Six-man tag was match two. Masaki Mochizuki, Gamma, and Problem Dragon versus Izumi Yokosuka, Kinki Horiguchi, and Yuzushi Kanda. Kanda got the pin on Problem Dragon to win that match. Then match three was Keisuke Okuda and Jason Lee defeating the team of Kaito Ishida and Kazuma Sakamoto when Ishida got DQ'd due to ref attacks on Okuda in 11 minutes and 11 seconds. And, you know, just was kind of like a standard Dragon Gate Cork and Open first few matches. The best match, in my opinion, out of those three was the tag match where we had another clash between Okuda and Ishida.
Yeah, that match was a lot of fun. I understand the non-finish there. I didn't mind it. It was a solid and brisk undercard to the show.
And then we got into more of the meat of the show. This was an 8-man tag. Don Fuji, Masato Yoshino, Don Fuji, and Kenichiro Arai versus the Team Boku team of Naruki Doi, Ryo Saito, and Punch Tominaga, with now the renamed Boku R Shimizu. It's a big joke on it. He used to be called Big R Shimizu. Shimizu lost in 12 minutes and 56 seconds with the Log Magistral Cradle from Ultimo.
So what do you think about this finish? Is this Shimizu being cycled down the card, or are we now facing the reality that this is what the former Big R Shimizu is now?
I hate saying I can't tell yet, but it does feel like at the very least he's being cycled. And it's something that, like, in this act, you have someone like Saito who fluctuates between being an all-out combat wrestler and then big match Ryo Saito. But you really kind of need Shimizu to be the top-of-the-line appeal here, and it's something that's very stark with where he is. And it's something where, I mean, when we get into Kobe World, you notice how he's being – it's at least a cycle down. I don't know if this is the reality for Boku or Shimizu going forward, though.
I think the perfect comparison is Saito. I think that's the future of his career. We'll get a Boku R Shimizu Dreamgate match maybe once every 18 months, once every 2 years. He'll be a Triangle Gate champion. He might even be a Twin Gate champion. But I really thought when he lost at Dangerous Gate that he would be toughened up and would become more serious and would be a main event level player truly for the first time in his career after, like I've said numerous times now, 2015, 2016, I really thought he was one of the 10 best wrestlers in the world. I mean, I really thought this guy was someone that maybe couldn't be a sustainable Dreamgate champion, but someone that deserved to be on the top of these cards. I think his future is Saito. I think he's going to primarily be a comedy guy, a glue guy, a staple on these shows, and every once in a while he'll peak really highly, but I just think we're at, you know, post-peak Shimizu now. I don't think, unless something drastically changes, or maybe until Team Boku ends, we're not getting Dia Hearts or Monster Express level Shimizu anytime soon.
Yeah, and it's something that when you like look at what's set up ahead, he is pretty much out of the mix in a lot of ways. And it makes you wonder, like, the generational war does feel like it's about to wrap up soon, but it does make you wonder, like, is he just not going to be a frontline player going forward? And it does really kind of feel like that the Boku R Shimizu, see, I said all three of his names for saying the right one, character does seem a lot like Sairio going forward.
It's a bummer. I'd like him to do more, but also there's just such a plethora of talent and the mid to, you know, mid card, upper mid card, and main event scenes that, you know, somebody has to fall off. And we saw UT, who we're just about to talk about, he seemed to, at least upon his return, be down cycled a little bit below the Brave Gate scene, which is his peak. Shimizu really got down cycled on the card, and I don't get the feeling that he's going to rebound anytime soon, which is a bummer, but, you know, you got to make cuts somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned UT. He was the big star in this next match. This was a six-man tag. This was a Kobe World preview match that, unlike a lot of big preview matches, this one over-delivered. It is the two challenger teams will be facing RED at Kobe World on Sunday. The Torimon team is Dragon Kid, Tsuji Kondo, and Kaga Tora. The Dragon Gate Generation team is Benkei, Yosuke Samaria, and UT. UT got the win with the Passion Flash Cradle on Kaga Tora in 16 minutes and 35 seconds. And they limited UT for so long, but it's very clear now that they aren't worried and the limiter is off. We got the thing I'm probably most excited for at Kobe World going ahead. UT and Tsuji Kondo, these are two guys that I slapped my forehead not thinking that these two guys would be great together, but it was the standout thing on the show is UT versus Tsuji Kondo in this match.
I sent Mike a message earlier today saying that if I had the pencil right now, I am already booking in advance. You want to pull up your TEW system and do your pre-booking. May 2021, Corken Hall, first round King of Gate. UT is rolling up Tsuji Kondo in the middle of Corken Hall. It's happening. And then Tsuji Kondo should go back to destroying this kid whenever he gets the chance. But that is the match that I just need it to happen. I have such a strong feeling about that match because I love this. And a lot of that is the Dragon Kid Kaga Tora Kondo team. Now, we'll preview Kobe World in a minute. I don't think they're winning the belts at World, but I hope this is not the end of this Kid Kaga Tora Kondo team. I think they are an excellent trio. I think they all complement each other so well. But the story coming out of this match was UT and Tsuji Kondo, and it makes sense because UT is someone who is the ultimate underdog. He has made a career off of fighting guys twice his size, and Tsuji Kondo, at least in the Dragon system, is best known for attempting to murder Dragon Kid at Kobe World 2004 and their feud that they had. And, you know, it's certainly the more apropos comparison to Dragon Kid is Dragon Daya, but UT is around the same size, even smaller than Dragon Kid, so it makes sense that those two work on such an incredible level, that being Kondo and UT. Plus, they both have extensive Yave backgrounds, and so you really see some slick grappling between these two, more so than just UT escaping death at every big bomb that Kondo throws at him.
Yeah, this was the second longest show on the card, 16 minutes. Go out of your way for it. Didn't just see that the English commentary version of this show just went up yesterday, so Monday as of the time of recording. So you'll at least get a chance to watch this match. This is the match to go out of your way of watching. The Japanese version of the show will be pulled by the time we do by the time the show is released. But I love this. I give this 4.25 stars.
I'm the same rating as you.
And then we had the main event. This was another preview. Dragon Gate versus RED. 8-man tag. Yamato, KZ, Kota Minoura, and Dragon Daya versus Ada, Kai, the newly dubbed SB Kento, the former Kento Kabune, and Daya Inferno, as SB Kento submitted Daya with the SB shooter. Thank you very much, Dragon Gate, for giving it a name so I don't try to butcher it like I did last week. And this really was kind of the SB show going into it, and yet I felt like there was a lot of solid face-offs that went ongoing in this match.
I might be higher on this match than you, but I will make this point really simple. If you are listening to this podcast, if you are on the fence about trying out Dragon Gate, maybe you're excited for Kobe World, and you're listening to this as sort of a primer, all I can tell you is to watch this main event. And it's not a match of the year contender. We've seen better matches in Dragon Gate this year. We've seen better multi-man matches in Dragon Gate this year. But if you are on the fence, watch this match. And then from there, you'll be able to determine your Dragon Gate viewing from here on out, because look, this is a snapshot of the modern era, and I just really, really liked that about this match. It reminded me a little bit of June 5th, 2007, the six-man three-way tag match that, you know, was a level above this match, because that three-way match is a match of the year contender, but it's Magnitude Kishiwada, Masato Yoshino, and Naruki Doi of Muscle Outlaws against New Hazard, Hulk Kong, and Shingo, and Typhoon of Dragon Kid, Ryo Saito, and Susumu Yokosuka. That match feels like a really specific snapshot of a specific era in Dragon Gate where they got all of the guys that really felt like they were on the cusp of doing something really interesting or were in the prime of their career, and they just let them go wild in Cork and Hall. And it, you know, it goes down. That's that June 2007 match, I think, is one of the more infamous matches in Dragon Gate history. It's one that circulated really well. A lot of people have seen it. This match probably won't have the same staying power, but if we're talking about Dragon Gate in 2020, this is the match. These are the guys that matter. These are the stories that matter, and the post-match only adds on to that with the return of Shun Skywalker. So, Mike, I don't know what you gave this. In my review over at voicesofwrestling.com, where I give extended thoughts on all these matches, I went 4.5.
I went 3.75. I thought that I think you're right, especially comparing to 2007. This is like the encapsulation of the promotion and the thing, and as a good entry point in this. It's just one of those things that maybe I was coming down from UT and Tsuji Kondo, but I thought this was a strong main event. I'm really now on board with this Inferno and Daya feud in a way that I was not last month. And, you know, it's something that, like, you guys see some matchups that we really haven't had opportunity to see a lot of. Like, SPK and Kota Minora has some really solid chemistry with each other. And it's just a solid main event. And here's one of the wondrous things about Dragon Gate. If you are if you're a new watcher, if this is the first time you're listening to the program, this match had 8 people in it. The oldest person in this match is Yamato at 39, and then Kai at 37. Everyone else in this match is under the age of 30, if not under the age of 25.
Kento Kabune, who won this match with submission, is 20 years old. I mean, we're talking about if everything goes right, if he stays healthy, if he doesn't flee the promotion, another 20 years of this. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. And Mike, I think your rating is appropriate. It's probably a 3.75 star match, but, you know, maybe this is too meta or far too philosophical. Maybe I'm just taking my reviewing job too seriously. But I felt like I needed to give this 4.5 because I do feel like this match needs to be preserved and to an extent memorialized in some way, because like I said, this is Dragon Gate right now. You know, we don't have Shima, we don't have Shingo, this is the company at large, and I just think that was really important to make note of. So I think I just have a very strong emotional reaction to that match, and because of it, I was much higher than anybody else I've seen. I think the semi-main event with UT and Kondo, everybody I've talked to, the ratings I've seen, it's all around 4.25. I'm much higher on the main event, but I'm okay with that because I think it represented something larger.
No, that's entirely fair. One thing I should note, KZ is over the age of 30. He's like 35. So just wanted to be factually correct here.
And he looks like he's 26. It's fine.
Yeah. No, he's one of those guys like me that is sneaky old. I'm someone that not only have I been carded by in GTA 5, but earlier this year, when I was doing campaigning during the Democratic primary for a certain candidate, the person that was my get out the vote partner thought I was in college. They thought I was like 19.
Well, congratulations on your win, by the way, Mike.
Oh, I mean, I'll take it. I'll take
I will say I'm in a much better state of mind than I was when we were recording this podcast last week, where around this time results for the election started pouring in, and it was going very poorly at first, and I don't remember if we did Dragon Gate USA or the weekly roundup first last week, but I know by the second show, I was just not having fun.
I gave you a pep talk, and it turned out to be right in between shows. I right now stand to make over $100 on this election because while you were in a bad mood, I was like, I need to go check out gambling right now, and was able to get in right before it changed on Joe Biden plus 180. So, you know, I'm in a lot better mood too. I'm about to get $110.
Look, I grew up in a house where there weren't a lot of strict rules. Like, my parents really don't have strong feelings about things that don't affect them in a negative way. They're very worldly people. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. But the one thing that I always grew up with, my dad hates gambling, and he doesn't like gamblers. And I grew up just thinking that all gamblers are degenerates. And I really reinforce that with people betting money on the future of our country. I was disgusted at the bets being thrown out there. I guess, you know, it's better to bet on Trump and maybe make a little scratch as we watch democracy crumble. But, oh, man, my degenerate alarms were going off all week last week. I could not believe it.
Here's the difference in our two upbringings. My parents took me to the horse track when I was four.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, not my parents. Not at all.
Anyways, so the post-match, as you mentioned, we had another face-off with Shun Skywalker and Ada. SBK kept on the SB shooter for like 2 minutes after, to the extent that I was like, man, they are really making the gimmick of that no one can get out of this hold underway. Then we had a big brawl, and Shun Skywalker came out doing the same stuff he did at Gate Destiny. And then our final note on the show is that Ada broke the dream key that he had on the title belt.
Do we think at Kobe World, this is, you know what? If this was a prop bet, I would put money on this because I think it'll happen. Do we think at Kobe World, Shun Skywalker is going to enter with his entrance music, or are the lights going to go down and he's just going to appear in the ring?
I kind of want him to just appear in the ring, but I assume that they're not going to. Like, if they do that, like, that's an interesting bet to me because I can see them going either way.
It's one of those. He either, if they're going to do that, he either has to be under the ring the entire show, or they have to cut the lights and this man has to run down the Kobe World stage in the dark and get to the ring in time. I've talked myself out of it, but the visual of Shun Skywalker running through Kobe World Hall in the dark to get into the ring is my new favorite visual.
Well, if they have an extra long pre-match video, then you could pretty much... I think it's even odds there. I mean, if it's a 4 minute video, they're going to dim the lights for the crowd so they focus the screen anyways. He won't even have to lose his breath on it.
What's the promo code? Is it mybookie/everythingelite?
Oh, it is mybookie.ag, and you just use the promo code elite.
Oh, my goodness.
For 100% free roll up to $1,000 on your first deposit, that is mybookie.com, and then type in elite. You can tell that I'm not the one who usually does the reads, can't you?
You can tell I outed myself as not listening to the last few episodes since I got the URL wrong.
You know, it is what it is. It is what
you guys,
it is.
You guys do a good job over there, Mike. Well done. Much like this KBS Hall show, by the end of it, I was delightfully surprised. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, this was a perfectly fine Kyoto show. It does have some stuff that was better than fine. It's a show that was like in a really weird place because you kind of would think that that face-off between Shun Skywalker and Ada should be the last thing there, but they had the show here. Probably would have been better if scheduling worked out. This was after Kobe World, but it was a fun show. It was on the 7th. It will remain on the network until the 14th. Attendance 219. That's down from 255. I mean, they've been running that area a whole lot, so... no big surprise here. And talking to you beforehand, there's only really one match that I had a whole lot of thoughts. So unless there's anything you really want to kind of get in on, I'm ready just to run down the results.
Oh, I've got thoughts on one match and one match only.
All right. So the opener was a 6-man tag. Team Boku of Saireo, Shimizu, and Punch Tomonaga lost to Susumu Yokosuka, Genki Horiguchi, and Yasushi Kanda with a countered La Maga Straw Cradle. That sets up the fact that now, at Gate of Origin, this team has next for whoever is the Triangle Gate champion team. Next match was RED versus Dragon Gate singles match. Yosuke Samaria beat Kazuma Sakamoto in 11 minutes, 28 seconds with a inside cradle. Match 3, Benkei and Minonora defeated Ultimo and Madoka Kakuta in 13 minutes and 32 seconds with the gang from Minonora on Kakuta. Match 4 is an 8-man tag. It was Dragon Gate versus RED. Yamato, Jason Lee, Keisuke Okuda, and Dragon Daya defeated BB Hulk, Kai, Kaito Ishida, and Daya Inferno. Daya won with the disqualification on Inferno. Tag team match, KZ and UT lost to Masato Yoshino and Tsuji Kondo when Kondo submitted UT with the Gorilla Clutch. And then the main event was Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, and Kagetora losing to the RED team of Ada, Takashi Yoshida, and SB Kento. SB Kento got the submission win again with the SB shooter. And as you said, there's only one real match to talk about. It's the semi-main event of KZ and UT versus Masato Yoshino and Tsuji Kondo. So what were your big takeaways of that match?
It was more of the same from Corkin Hall. I was right on the dot at 4 stars here. I think this was a legitimately great match, and it's one of those, you know, if you're dipping your toes in the water this week, sign up for Kobe World for the Dragon Gate Network. Watch the last half of that Corkin Hall show, and you know, if your blood's pumping, if you want a little bit more before Kobe World, I'll tell you two things. One, watch Yoshino and Kondo versus KZ and UT on the show. I thought it was absolutely excellent. And then I tweeted this out from the Open the VoiceGate account today, but the February Corkin Hall show is back up on the network with commentary fully produced, and that has the Naruki Doi versus KZ Dreamgate match on it, which might be my overall match of the year. If not, it's only going to be beat out by a few of the Tokyo Dome matches from January. I wanted to mention that somewhere on the podcast tonight, because I think there are going to be a lot of new people signing up for the network. This is where I'm going to do it. Watch the last half of the Corkin Hall show, Yoshino and Kondo versus KZ and UT, and if you want more, Doi versus KZ from February.
Yeah, no, 2-7 is still my match of the year, so worth going out for way for, and just was a great tag match. I mean, this was like another perfect way of building up things for the Triangle Gate, and you also had Yoshino, who took the light in tying UT up into knots. It just was a good time. It was a solid quarter hour. I give it 3 3/4. It was easily the match of the night.
Yeah, can't knock you there. It was a very fun tag match on a show that it wasn't a bad show, but we just had the Corkin. Kobe World's coming up. It just felt a little inconsequential in the grand scheme of things.
Right. And then, you know, it's time to talk about Kobe World. It's going to be the 15th. In Kobe World Kenan Hall, English commentary, 3 p.m. Japan start time. Check your local listings. I'm not going to butcher all of the time code differences there. Before we start breaking down the matches overall, interesting Corkin Hall. Very interesting that there are matches to get people on here, but a lot of the matches here on the show just overall are not what I would have had 2 months ago leading into this, but you know, a lot of stuff here I find on the whole pretty interesting, and I'm really stoked for the show.
I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a really good show. You know, last year during Kobe World, Mike, think about this. This was only a year and a few months ago, the Ben K versus Pac match. I mean, that seems like it was a lifetime ago, but that was last Kobe World, last July. For those that don't know, maybe a little bit newer to the promotion, I'm assuming we have some newer listeners this week. I could be wrong, so I apologize if I'm giving you very basic information. Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival is the biggest Dragon Gate show of the year. Outside of the top New Japan shows, it's the biggest show in Japan every year. I think that's fair to say now, because I don't think Noah or All Japan, unless they're running Sumo Hall, you know, they're not running bigger venues, and I think they don't fill up those venues, and Dragon Gate typically puts on a pretty nice house in Kobe World Hall. Normally, this show takes place in July. For a while, it was taking place the first week of July. Now, it typically takes place the third week of July, but because of the globe and the pandemic that's happening, it was moved to November of this year. The pageantry is second to none. This feels really, other than Wrestle Kingdom and WrestleMania, this is probably the show that feels biggest on the wrestling calendar. Dragon Gate takes this show very seriously, and I like this card. Last year, I think we were expecting a show of the year contender, and it delivered. It's one of the best Dragon Gate shows of all time. Mike, did we go over our Kobe World recommendations last year on the podcast? Is that something we did?
Yeah, I remember us doing it last year on the podcast because we talked about the New Hazard Trios match from Dead or Alive. Oh, not Dead or Alive, Kobe World 2007.
So if you go back about a year in the feed and, you know, it's out there somewhere, if you can't find it, tweet at one of us or tweet at the Open the Voice Gate account. We can certainly link you to it. But all of the Kobe Worlds from the first one in 1999 through 2019, they're all on the network. Some of them are in full. Some of them are clipped, but you'll get the big matches in full, even on the clipped shows. So if you're new to the network, I mean, you've got 20 years of history to dig through there. This year, I don't have show of the year vibes. I don't even know if this will be a better show than Dangerous Gate when things are all said and done, but I do really like most of this card.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things offered here and a lot of things that, you know, don't happen too often that are happening here that makes me really intrigued with it. And this is such like a big show for Dragon Gate. This is the first time that since I can remember, outside of that one Dead or Alive, they had a lot of singles matches to build up the cage, that they had a 9-match main show card. Like, that's how serious this show is to Dragon Gate. And outside of, if you take take New Japan out of the picture, this will probably be the most attended show for the rest of the year in the world.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair assessment.
So I think it's best just to start with the opener and go on from there. It is match 4 in the feud of the year. It is the Open the Brave Gate Championship match. It is the return match from just last week. It is Keisuke Okuda defending his Open the Brave Gate title in his first defense against the former champion, Kaito Ishida. Okuda accepted this match as this challenge, but with the condition that it is the opening match. This harkens back to Dangerous Gate, where Kaito Ishida made a defense against Yosuke Santamaria, but since Santamaria typically is a comedy wrestler, he refused to have this match outside of the first match on the show. So this seems like it's the big blow-off. Okuda and Ishida, who do you think is walking out of Kenan Hall as Brave Gate champion?
Mike, I know I was wrong when we gave our Gate of Destiny previews and I said Kaito Ishida was retaining the title. I got news for you, though. I'm doubling down. I think this match is such a red herring, and I think, and I will explain as we get to it, that we are going to need Twin Gate challengers, and Kaito Ishida is winning his belt back in the opening match.
You know, it is something that with the championships and where they are right now, that doesn't seem like that's that of an insane take, if you ask me. I see your logic there. I think Okuda wins just because I think Ishida is going to be doing bigger things soon. So he's done with the Brave Gate. And I think it's something that for Okuda, you still have all these matches that he has not had yet, as he's only been a champion for a week. And I hope to see that continue. But I totally see your pathologic there.
Oh, God. I mean, if Okuda wins, we're in luck because we're getting more Brave Gate Okuda defenses. And that's, you know, that's going to be delightful if that happens. But I just, them doing this match again, you say Ishida's going to be doing bigger and better things, and I agree. I think he's the future of whatever heel unit comes next, and I think he'll be a main event player. But if he's the future in some capacity, are they really going to have Okuda beat him twice in 2 weeks?
I mean, that is, like, the thing is, he's now going to be definitively out of the division, in theory, if he loses this. So is it something that you could still do the big push that we're expecting for him with him taking a step back and losing these two matches? It's remained to be seen, but I do have a overall kind of, don't even want to say a suspicion, but it's something where I feel like that Ishida wins back the title. Who does he really have defenses against? UT, probably? Maybe if you're really stretching it, Shisa. Like, it's something where Ishida has pretty much done all he can, and that's why I kind of see that it's time for Okuda to get the title and run with it.
Well, look, I got news for you. If you're throwing out Ishida versus Shisa, we need that match to happen. So now I really hope Ishida retains the belt.
I mean, it has to happen in front of 70 housewives in Kobe Lapis Hall if it's going
to
happen, right?
It's going to happen in my backyard. I'm flying them into the country. Are you kidding me? Ishida versus Super Shisa? Oh, my God. I'll get to Japan before Larry Dallas if they book that match.
I mean, it is a dream notebook match for me as well. So if that's the route, then come on. Early, actually perfect champion Kate defense. Super Shisa versus Kaito Ishida. This happens. Let's go. But speaking of Shisa, he's involved in the Battle Royal on match 2. This basically has everyone on the show. They try to get everyone onto every show, even with like how much of a regular they are or part-timer. So it is a Battle Royal. The participants are Super Shisa, Konamawa Ichikawa, Sachi Okoboy, Gamma, Boku R. Shimizu, Punch Tomonaga, problem dragon. Diamante, who I guess is being cleared from his elbow injury that forced him to vacate the titles. Hyo, Ho-Ho, Loon, and Jimmy, the winner of this match, earns the right to ask for an in-ring wish of their choosing.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a real geek collection, and then Diamante. And that does not, you know, exclude Boko R. Shimizu from being in the geeks. I think that's where he is now. Now, of course, he could win this match and challenge for the Dreamgate belt, and I could look like an idiot next week. I already said I don't like umbrellas. I'm already looking like an idiot. So it wouldn't shock me if Shimizu wins this match, but, you know, I guess it could be Diamante. It could, if Okuda retains, it could be Hyo, and that could be the next defense. That wouldn't shock me. Selfishly, I hope Jimmy wins, just because Jimmy's been in the dojo all year. I think he works hard. I think he's gotten much better lately. But with the stipulation being that, you know, the winner gets the right to ask for an in-ring related wish of their choosing, I tend to think they're going to, you know, go with a Shimizu or a Diamante, or even a Gamma I could see winning this match. So I really have no feel for the booking here because of that added stipulation.
I mean, I'm of the belief I think Punch Imanaga can win this thing, since he will probably just say, I want a title match for, like, the Triangle Gate or the Twin Gate. Like, it's hard to count people out in this match given the stakes at the end of it.
Yeah, that would suck. I would not love Punch winning this match. Punch, again, seems like the nicest guy in the world, but my general rule of thumb, I don't want Punch winning at Kobe World, and I think that's fair to say.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
No, you're entirely justified with that. Match 3 is a tag match. Probably, if you're looking for a bet for the sneaky best match on the show that's not a title match, it's this one. It is the tag team of Maruhi Iesapa, representing the Torimon Generation, Genki Horiguchi and Ryo Saito, going against the rookies, Takeo Kamei and Madoka Kakuta. And this match could really knock everyone out of the water. Like, this match does have that ceiling in my mind.
Oh yeah, I think Kakuta and Kamei. Is it Takeo Kamei or Takeo Kamei?
Kamei is how it's pronounced.
You were saying Kamei, and I need to get on that. You were correct at first. Yeah, this match could be excellent. I think Horiguchi is going to have chemistry that's really strong with both of them. I'm hoping Saito leans more into hardworking Saito rather than comedy Saito. But I can't help but wonder if Saito as a whole is going to play a much larger role in this match in the future, because we've seen Kento Kabune, SBK, join up with RED. He keeps on telling his contemporaries, Kamei and Kakuta, that they can join him as well in the heel unit, but I don't see that happening. Mike, can you talk me off of the ledge? Can you get the idea out of my mind that the two rookies are joining Team Boku?
That thought never crossed my mind.
That's okay. That's what I need to hear. I'm reading too much into things.
It's something where, I mean, I think that eventually they're going to have to break these two up when they're done with everything, because those are two rookie lost posts for a little bit, and you already have Punch Shimonaga in that unit. So I just don't see it happening for that reason.
I'm very much okay with that, but it was something that I couldn't entirely ignore. I do think the rookies are winning this match. I think that is a fair assessment, actually. A very easy prediction to make.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the sense I get out of it. I think that Kamei and Kakuta have been picking up falls enough, and of course with SBK now being a champion, they're going to want to take that step forward as well. And you know, I mean, Genki's not really protected. Ryo Saito can take falls, so I mean, it's not like you're putting, Yamato and Benkei against these two.
Yeah, it's a winnable match, I think, for either side, but I think the rookies have momentum right now, and that's the direction they're going with.
Yes, I'm totally with you there. First of our three special matches, these would be main events anywhere in the world. When you lay your head down on your pillow when you sleep, you think of Ultimo Dragon, Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, and Taru versus Susumu Yokosuka, Yuzushi Kanda, Kness, and Taru Nohashi representing Michinoku Pro.
So we talked last week about Taru, his scathing shoot promo that he left at Gate of Destiny, which it hurt my feelings, but that's okay. I'll get past it. Taru, I hope this is it. I don't want to see him ever again. I think he's bad news. I think he's a bad wrestler. I don't want him around the promotion. I understand, though, with Ultimo being back, he's trying to mend and heal as many relationships as he can, and Taru being back on this show is great symbolism, even if he's just an abysmal wrestler and always has been. What I'm more curious about, Mike, is your thoughts on Taru Nohashi, the former Arakan Sito in Toriumon X.
I always like Taru Nohashi. Whenever he shows up, I know I'm having a good time, and he's on a team where I think they're going to lose. I think Nohashi or Kness are taking the falls. But it's something that it was going to be like fun seeing him with Ultimo again, Mochizuki and Fuji. And I think that it's a nice like unsurprise or nice surprise here that at least provides a little bit more spice in a match that would have been most like, oh, this is like the Ultimo matches they've been having since last year.
Yeah, Nohashi is a mainstay in Michinoku Pro now, which doesn't mean a ton. I'm sure I've come across him on one of their four shows a year that makes tape, and even less this year. I have not seen a second of 2020 Michinoku Pro, but he's not someone I really have fond memories of. I'm looking now at the Toriumon X career that he had, and you know, I've said on this podcast before, other than Mike and Jay and Alan Forel, I think I've seen more Dragon System than just about any other English speaker, but I have seen literally zero Toriumon X. And I'm looking now at the final show this promotion had on September 9th, 2004, and Nohashi is in a featured singles match with Minobu Murakami, who later became a mainstay in Michinoku Pro. Also on that show, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kaz Hayashi, and Yuji Nagata versus Minobu Nakanishi, Minoru Suzuki, and Ultimo Dragon. I remain incredibly confused by the history and existence of Toriumon X.
I mean, I feel like the people who are involved in Toriumon X are confused by it, even 16 years later. It's just something that's kind of neat. Like, this is a special match for a special show, and I think that when in doubt, you pick the team that Ultimo's on. I think Ultimo's team wins this match.
Not to go into a cage match wormhole here, but the other match that I was looking at Nohashi's career earlier today, he wrestled in Chikara a few times. Once
right.
During the 2006 Tag World Grand Prix for Team Toriumon, where he teamed with Amigo Suzuki against Team Dragon Door of Skyda and Milano Collection AT. I'd really like to hunt that match down. That seems super interesting to go back and watch.
Yeah, it's that's an interesting match on an interesting tournament, especially like the idea of Team Dragon Door existing in 2006 with someone who's... I don't think Milano ever showed up in Dragon Door. So it's just like a wild thing to have.
I'm glad you said that because I didn't think so either. And it looks like he had one match in the promotion. And this is a dandy. This is February 7th, 2006. It is the Italian Collection, Milano Collection AT, Berlinetta Boxer, and Ibushino, Kota Ibushi, against the Agan Iso trio of Shuji Kondo, Takayuya Sugawara, and Brother Yashi. That's enough cage match deep diving for now. I'm sure we'll do it one more time before this episode ends. But my God, what a six-man tag.
Dragon Door was weird. Just... just weird. Just a weird promotion. Like, it, I can now, next to like Toriumon X, it's the thing I'm always like, why? Just why? But yeah, that leads us into the second special match. This is the singles match. This is the match they've been building up since September. This is Dragon Daya and Daya Inferno finally getting their hands on each other one-on-one. And do you think this is it for Inferno? because that's the thing that kind of stuck in my head and make me think that Inferno is going to win this match.
I'm really conflicted on this match. I really don't have a strong idea because we've been hearing from a few different people now that, you know, D'Inferno, his days as that character under that mask are numbered. And we've heard it from a few different sources from people that I wouldn't normally hear from just about Dragon Gate things in general, but we're assuming it's Yuki Yoshioka, who was in Mexico for a long time. So, you know, a few different people dropped in there. I don't know. I my gut is that that Inferno's winning this match and then probably unmasking on the December Corican. I don't know if that would make storyline sense, but that's kind of the direction that I feel things are going. I don't know. I have a very bad feel on this match and the next match. I really don't. I know Dragon Gate booking pretty well. I feel like I can at least hand in the right direction of what they're doing. I have nothing for this match.
Yeah, and I guess it's whenever they want to do the reveal dictates the finish here, because if they want to have him do a reveal really soon, makes sense for Inferno to get the win here, and then we have some sort of blow-off at a later date. If this is not going to be a reveal in the immediate future, if we're talking about mid-2021 for Inferno finally unmasking, I think Dia wins. You put this a little bit more on ice, and you revisit it in 2021 and finally have like a true apuestas match between these two.
That's what I'm struggling to figure out is, will this character unmask after beating Dia or after Dia beats him? And I guess wrestling logic would probably say when Dragon Dia finally scores a pinfall on Dia Inferno, the character's going to unmask. So I'm going to change my prediction. I think Dragon Dia is winning here, and I think we are building towards an unmasking sometime in December.
Yeah, I could see that being a Final Gate thing or at that first Corican, but I think that it's going to be Inferno. I think that it's something that I just have a suspicion that I feel like that Inferno wins. It's just nothing other than my gut here.
It's a weird match. It's been well built. I mean, I talked about the debut of Dia Inferno, I think, is one of the greater character building segments I've ever seen in wrestling. I mean, I'm still thinking about his debut and how he showed up, and just his impact was second to none. It was unbelievable. I've liked his character, I've liked his in-ring work, and I still just, I don't know what to make of this match. I'm really confused by it.
Yeah, I co-sign with all those points here, and it's just, we don't know how long this feud's going to go. There's no real indication other than things we heard that this isn't a permanent character. So, who knows with that one, and who knows with this next one, the last special match, the last non-title match on the show. It is the special six-man tag match. Naruki Doi and Masato Yoshino. Doi Yoshi are teaming with Toru Owashi, who he is a DDT wrestler, but I guess he is freelance, but it's against the Dragon Gate Generation team of Yamato, KZ, and Strong Machine J. And I think it's a Dragon Gate Generation win. I think that it's something to build up this team, especially someone like Jay, who does not have a major win under his belt, and I could see him pinning Masato Yoshino at the end of this match.
This is a weird match, right? Like this.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
This feels a little bit thrown together. And we talked about it a few weeks ago about how Yamato was weirdly out of place at Kobe World, which is never the case and has not been the case since probably 2008. But, yeah, I don't know what to make of this match. I think if Strong Machine J takes the fall, if he's the one that's pinned or submitted, I think that will say a lot about his future and, you know, whether or not he can be healthy on a regular basis, whether or not they still have the faith in him that they had last year. I think we'll learn a lot there. If he pins Yoshino or Doi or Owashi, who every time Owashi shows up, I'm always afraid that he's going to become full-time, that I dread a post-match promo where Ultimo says, hey, why don't you come by here monthly? I don't want that. I think Owashi's fine. I think he's also fine because he's coming in four times a year, maybe, and I don't need more of him than that. But I think he's taking the fall, and I guess Jay pinning him, if he can get him up for that Devil's Windmill suplex, is probably the right answer. It's just, I don't know, it's a strange match. It's just a weird collection of talent, and, you know, because we haven't heard anything either behind the scenes or from the promotion themselves about Yoshino retiring at the end of the year, I'm going to assume Yoshino's wrestling through at least the first half of 2021, because this does not feel like Yoshino's farewell to Kobe World Hall.
Yeah, that's the wild thing about this, is that I would put the chance on Yoshino retiring or wrestling at Pro Wrestling Festival 2021 at very low. So it does really feel like, though, that they had everything else kind of planned out, and it's weird that these five are the five that do not feel like they had a distinct plan going into this match, and makes you, at least, not to speak for you, but makes me wonder if it's like a big red herring that this is it. And I can't shake that feeling. I don't expect it, but just with how this match is constructed in such a kind of an odd way, it's hard to get a read on it.
I don't think so. I just think Dragon Gate and Yoshino in particular, when it's it, will know. And I don't think they're going to throw us a curveball there. It's just, it's weird to think that Yamato's the one that sticks out here, because Doi, Yoshino, and Awashi teaming, I think that would make sense on a normal Kobe World show. That doesn't surprise me at all. It's Yamato not having a featured match that is really just eye-catching to me, just because, again, it's Kobe World, it's Yamato. He's more often than not, he's wrestling for the Dream Gate. I thought that's what he was going to be doing this year. I thought it would be Yamato versus Eita, and it's not, and so it's just a strange match. But I think Strong Machine J will be involved in the finish one way or another, either pinning Awashi or Yoshino, or if he's getting pinned, I think that is a sign of bad things to come for the Masked Man.
Yeah, that's the real bellwether in this match, is on what side of the finish J is. I'm totally on board with you there. Then we get into the other three title matches on the show. The first one is Dragon Gate Generation Champion Team of Kota Minora and Jason Lee defending the Twin Gate against the team that confuses all of us, the RED team of BB Hulk and Kai. In case, did you ever hear across last week the essential nugget of why Hulk or Kai are teaming together? Because I still have no idea.
No, I do not know, and it is something that in any other promotion, New Japan included, AEW included, if they were teaming together, I would not care. For those that don't know, Kai broke BB Hulk in half basically last year. Did he officially break his neck? Was that, I know Mike is having a horrible coughing fit over there. Mike, are you doing all right?
I'm good.
I'm sorry to hear your struggles there, but so Kai and BB Hulk had this, you know, a legitimate injury happen in the ring last year, which in storyline led to Hulk turning heel and turning on Kai specifically, and Kai and Yamato together. So it bothers me that Kai is now heel and that he's teaming with BB Hulk, because to me they should still be side-eyeing one another. And that should kind of be the direction they go. And it's just storytelling that I wouldn't expect from another promotion, but from Dragon Gate, I need that reasoning there, because it's a company built on intricate details. So it's a little bit frustrating that they're teaming together. It's also a little bit frustrating that I think there's a 100% chance they win this match. Minoru and Lee have had a really nice run. Jason Lee has shown that he can hang in big spots. And Coach Minoru has proven that, you know, he's a future guy. He's a future main eventer, and this was his first title run, and I thought it was a very, very solid reign for the two of them. But Hulk and Kai are winning this match, and it's why I think, to an extent, that Okuda's losing the opener, because I think RED is going to need babyface challengers, and it might come by way of Benkei and Kaisuke Okuda teaming with one another for the Twin Gate belts.
Yeah, no, I totally co-sign with all of that. I drank some LaCroix that went down the wrong pipe, so I apologize for my voice for the next minute or so. But it's something where my desire for Lee and Minoru to retain is solely because I want them to have more matches as champions. But it just really seems like that Hulk and Kai, they have to be together for some reason, and I think it's, as you're saying, that time to get some fresh challengers in the scene. And Minoru and Lee, really, they're at a point now that we're not going to get probably a speed muscle challenge. We're not going to get Yokosuka Chome. It just kind of seems like a logical ending point.
It's frustrating because they do have those matches left in the tank, especially a speed muscle match, and given Jason Lee's history in Maximum with Doi and Yoshino, it would be really nice to get that match, but unfortunately, this is just a logical end to a title run, and when we previewed the match that they won the titles in back in August, I said I want them to win simply for the fact that for the past 2 years, the Twin Gate belts have revolved around Yamato, Kai, and BB Hulk in some form or fashion. They are the teams, they are the guys that are always holding these titles, and they haven't done a bad job with them, but I'm ready for something new, and Minoru and Lee were those new guys, and now we're going right back to Hulk and Kai, and I'm sure they'll have a fine reign. They might be a good team, but just for the sake of freshness on the card, it's a bummer to see the Twin Gate belts going back there.
Yeah. And, you know, as I've been saying, this is probably the ceiling for Jason Lee, as badly as I don't want it to be. And that's another reason why I want to see this title run continue. I want Jason Lee to get the recognition that he deserves. And also, like, as you were saying, don't really... It's okay that they're in the Twin Gate title scene, but it's to a point where it feels like that trio of Hulk, Kai, and Yamato kind of dominated, and I'm ready for us to fully close the door on that era of the Twin Gate titles.
I don't think it's happening, though, and I think it's a bummer, but Jason Lee, like you said, he's been absolutely incredible. I think he is a true contender for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter most underrated category, the guy that is under-pushed. I think Jason Lee is that guy, because he's shown he can hang with everybody on the roster, and he can hang, you know, impressing people in an opening six-man tag match in Corken Hall, but now he has these big-time Twin Gate Big Show matches under his belt as well, and he's delivered in those as well. He's truly an incredible talent that if he's, you know, in the New Japan Juniors division or if he's in AEW, he's a guy that people are talking about and a guy that would generate buzz. But he's in Dragon Gate where the working standard is so high that for as good as he is, he's kind of just another guy on the roster.
Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, this is like the perfect place for him, and this is like the perfect position for him within Dragon Gate. And I just don't want it to end because this is the only company that this would happen for him. So.
Alas, we do have the Open the Triangle Gate match to talk about.
That's right. We're getting a now rare three-way match. It is for the Triangle Gate Championship. The champion team is the RED team of Takashi Yoshida, Kazuma Sakamoto, and SB Kento. The two challenger teams are Torimon Generation of Dragon Kid, Tsuji Kondo, Kagetora, and the Dragon Gate Generation team is Benkei, Yosuke Sanmaria, and UT. And it's interesting. Like, it makes sense why they would have this match here, but before three-way war, they've really gotten out of the idea of doing three-way matches here, and it's, you know, this is, other than, like, random singles matches, this is the first real big one that I can remember from this feud.
I was going to ask, has there been a three-way tag match in 2020 for Dragon Gate?
I do not think so. I know there's been three-way singles matches, but tag team matches? I know one of, if it's happened, it's not made tape.
Or it hasn't been a trios match. It's been two-on-two-on-two. So that's another element that I had not considered. Look, this is my most anticipated match of the night. I think this has a chance to be legitimately great at match of the year contender level, and I hope I'm not jinxing myself by coming in with too high expectations, but look, you've got the RED team, Takashi Yoshida, who is not good, but can play his role well in matches like this, Kazuma Sakamoto, who I've said since his debut in the company, he has the footwork and the talent to hang in these matches. You've got SB Kento, who, I mean, my God, you know, on top of the world right now, just unbelievable. I talked earlier, I love the Toriumon team, the junior heavyweight, middleweight, heavyweight aspect they have with Kid, Kagetora, and Kondo. And the Dragon Gate Generation team, you've got Benkei in there, you're going to have Big Match Maria, and you're going to have Big Match UT. I mean, this has a chance to be legitimately great, and I hope it delivers on that level. Because, you know, the finish to me, the question with the finish is, who is SB Kento going to submit? I don't know if the result is in question, but how high this match peaks is up for debate, and I hope they kill it, because now you have the added wrinkle that, unless Mike and I are forgetting something, and I don't think we are, it's the first nine-man trios match that Dragon Gate has had all year, and Mike and I were speculating back in May, before we knew that World would be moved to November, when we thought it still might take place in July, that this style of match should headline this show to fully capture the generational warfare. Instead, we get it in the semi-main event. And I also think that's important. This is not match 4. This is not match 5. This is the semi-main event. This is getting time, and this could be legitimately, legitimately great.
And it's something where, especially with like Kento, I think that we're on the same page. RED, I mean, they're not going to have Kento just lose this immediately with how they're booking him. It's just something where you like look at this match and how it's coming together. Of course, you have Kondo and Benkei, you have Yoshida that's there, and then everyone else here, that this is a match that I think you could put lofty expectations for just because of the people involved. But at the same time, you have to keep yourself rooted in a vein of realism just because it's Yoshida, Kagetora, and Sakamoto here, that this is interesting. Like, I don't know how this match goes. There's a way I hope it goes, but I don't necessarily see it happening. I'm just hoping we get a lot of UT and Kondo here.
Yeah, it's there's so many combinations to like in this match. You not only have UT and Kondo, you have Benkei and Kondo, you have Benkei and Dragon Kid, who I think are excellent together, and you have Kento Kabune, SB Kento, with everyone. I mean, he could step up to the plate and fight every single person in this match, and I trust that his chemistry is going to be off the charts. I mean, I don't remember us getting extended Kento-UT interaction. That's another one of those things that could just, they could have a flurry of moves in this match that are going to be unmatched by the rest of the wrestling world. I'm just so excited to see what these guys come up with, and, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, it's UT in the semi-main event of Kobe World. This will be the biggest match of his life. UT delivers in big matches. I really think this is going to be a special match, even with the handicap of Takashi Yoshida being involved.
And it's something that, even to Yoshida's benefit, he's shown some really good chemistry with SB Kento. Like this RED team is not a big speed bump to get over. It's something that, you know, it could really work out really well here. And then we're talking about something truly special if it turns out this RED team is not going to just be a lot of Takashi Yoshida slowing things down.
I'm ecstatic for it. I think this and the main event are going to be, no matter what we get on the undercard, this and the main event, I feel very good about.
Yeah, these are the two matches probably worth going out of your way for. That leads us to the main event. It is for the Open the Dream Gate Championship. It is Ada making his second defense against Shun Skywalker in his first match since Excursion. What's your percentage on Shun winning this match?
100%. I don't know how he could come back and lose this. I just don't, you know, I want to talk about Shun Skywalker at length, but to answer your question quickly, 100% he's winning this match.
I'm probably 99 just because I can't count out Ada retaining here, but just feels like that this is the coronation here. And for someone like Shun Skywalker returning in his first match in Kobe World and first match in Dragon Gate in 2020, it's really remarkable and really bold doing this for a Kobe World main event.
You know, Dragon Gate likes sending the fans home happy. That's a thing that matters to them, especially on their biggest show of the year. If you look at the main events, and, you know, every Kobe World, with the exception of 2006, the main event has been the Dream Gate match. And there was no comprehensive evidence to say one way or another Eita's retaining or Eita's losing the belt. In 2007, Shima won the belt over Liger. In 2008, Shingo won the vacant belt over BB Hulk. In 2009, Doi won the Brave Gate Dream Gate unification match. 2010, Yoshino won over Yamato. 2013, Shingo over Shima. 2014, Hulk over Yamato. 2016, Yamato over Shingo. And 2019, Benkei over Pac. I mention those matches because, with the exception of 2008, when Shingo beat BB Hulk, those were all baby faces getting their moment at the end of the show. I think a similar pattern is going to take shape here. I think Eita has been positioned as this really dastardly heel. He's been the face of a heel unit for 2 years now, and ultimately him winning the belt at Kobe World, or I guess not him winning, because if you win the belt as a heel, you're still going to get that shock and awe pop, assuming everything is done right. But him retaining the belt as a heel is a different story. It's why the hypothesis of Doi versus Eita being the original Kobe World main event makes sense, because I do think, especially with a match that they had at Memorial Gate, that was a Kobe World main event, where by the end of it, you're so sucked into the story of the match that it doesn't matter that Eita's a heel winning this match. Eita as a heel coming in with the title, though, I think Shun, again, it's a 99.9, I'm going to say 100% chance he wins this match. One, because Eita's a heel, and I just don't think they're going to have the heel champion retain. But two, Shun Skywalker has been groomed for this moment. And I just want to encapsulate his career up to this point a little bit, because I think there are some things that maybe people forgot about. He's been away from Dragon Gate since December 4th of last year. So, I mean, Mike, we know people over at Voices of Wrestling who have not watched Dragon Gate with Shun Skywalker involved. And I think it's important to kind of remind people, you know, this is a guy that debuts in 2016. He's in the same class as Yuki Yoshioka, Benkei, Hyo Watanabe, and the now retired Katsumi Takashima. For the first year and a half, 2 years of his career, you know, he debuted as Shun Watanabe. He quickly donned the mask and became Shun Skywalker. And there's a period of Korakuen Hall shows in 2017 and 2018 where every single Korakuen Hall show opens with a Shun Skywalker match and a six-man or eight-man tag where Skywalker is deliberately given 90 seconds or 2 minutes of showcase time. And more often than not, that was him doing a big dive to the outside. It started with him taking the falls. By the end of that point of his career, he was the one getting the falls in these matches. But it was very blatant that these were Skywalker showcases in the openers. From there, his first big break, he's teaming with Masaki Mochizuki in the All Japan Junior Heavyweight Tag League. They did not go super far in the tournament. Skywalker obviously took all of the losses there, but it was a big, big time moment for Skywalker where it was like, oh, you're seeing this guy, like, one, he's kind of a gimmicky wrestler. He kind of feels like he'd be an early 90s Michinoku Pro guy, but he fits in All Japan. Like, he looks like the best worker in this tournament. And he's with All Japan Junior Heavyweights. It gave him a legitimacy that he needed. And then, for me, the turning point for Skywalker is Dangerous Gate 2018. He and Mochizuki team for the they go after the Twin Gate belts with BB Hulk and Yamato. And Shun Skywalker almost dies about 10 different times in that match. Skywalker is an amazing high flyer, but it's not like watching Pac or Ricochet or Kota Ibushi. This man will make you scared for not only his life, but your own life, because you never know where this guy's going. And Shun has this train wreck of a performance that is so beautiful and death-defying and unbelievable. And from there, it really seemed like he figured out just how to be Shun Skywalker to the fullest extent. He's got a 20-minute draw December 4th, 2018 in Korakuen Hall with UT. That leads at the beginning of 2019 to the Rookie Rankings Tournament, which he wins. He beats Kaito Ishida in the finals in January at that Korakuen Hall show. And then February 5th, 2019, he beats Benkei clean in a singles match in Korakuen Hall. He's the one guy that beat Benkei in Benkei's quest to the Open the Dream Gate belt. After that, Benkei would be undefeated in King of Gate. He would beat Pac for the belt at Kobe World, but he lost to Shun Skywalker. And then from there, he wrestles once again with Mochizuki on the Giant Baba Death Anniversary show, where they teamed against Jinsei Shinzaki and Naomichi Marufuji. He went on after winning the Rookie Ranking Tournament, after beating Benkei. He loses to Pac at Champion Gate last year. It is one of the single greatest storytelling matches I've ever seen. I'm higher on that match than just about anybody else, but I really thought we were watching a masterclass performance from both men, because the result was never in question. There was a 0% chance Skywalker was winning that match, and they kind of worked it like that. Like, it's full of hope spots and gasps for air of Skywalker possibly beating this guy, but really he never has a chance. And then we see him transition into this really unique period, starting at Kobe World of last year, where he starts losing all of these big matches. At World, he loses to KZ. At Dangerous Gate, he loses to Susumu. At the October Korakuen last year, he loses to Masato Yoshino. At Gate of Destiny last year, he's in this lottery tag match where he and Mochizuki team together against KZ and Yamato, and Shun Skywalker loses again. The November Korakuen Hall show, it's Speed Muscle against Benkei and Shun Skywalker, and Shun loses again. And then finally, December 4th last year, Benkei versus Shun Skywalker, and Shun loses again. It is a long-term story being told here, and the important thing is Shun Skywalker has been groomed for this moment. He has a career of big matches, and more importantly, he has a history and a career of delivering in these big matches. And for all of Eita's faults, and there are a lot of them, although I feel bad for Eita in some respects, because this reign has just, you know, I think unfortunately we learned a lot about Eita in this reign, and that is that he is always the bridesmaid and never the bride, because even with the Open the Dreamgate title, he never felt like the most important guy on the card. But he's done his duty. He has held the belt from August to November to get to this point, where the coronation is going to be Shun Skywalker ending Kobe World with the Open the Dreamgate belt around the waist. It's not fair to call him an ace. We're not going to call Shun Skywalker the future of this promotion, but he is the man for the moment, and he is your next Open the Dreamgate champion.
And it's something for Shun that it's not just like the man of the moment, and it's not him representing like future acedom. It's just representing the future of the company, because when the big story of Dragon Gate, really, since 2015, I would say, and I'm writing an article, a column about this that should be up, if not Friday, up Saturday, talking about how Dragon Gate is in this position that a lot of promotions face, and it is, especially in Japanese wrestling, that your bedrock person in your promotion, your Misawa and Kobayashi, or not Kobayashi, Kobashi and Noah, your Ricky Dozen, even in the first ever promotion Japan had, they're so reliant on these guys. And whenever something happens where they pass away, leave wrestling, or retire, a lot of these companies crumble. And it's something that with Dragon Gate, they've been very fortunate that for the first 21 years of the promotion, they based it around wrestlers that were very young in 1998 and 1999. You talk about Dragon Kid, you talk about Ryo Saito, you talk about Shima. They started wrestling when they were 20 and 21. So they got this nice 20-year thing where you have these guys that the crowd knows, that's built up around them. And it's not a singular ace, unlike Ricky Dozen or Misawa or Kobashi. It's this group that they've been able to bank on and has been this big draw for Dragon Gate fans, Toriumon fans. But it's now 2020. We're about to be 2021. All those wrestlers in that generation, there's more days behind them than there are forward in the wrestling ring. We are already seeing the prolonged retirement of Masato Yoshino, and he's the first. Sooner rather than later, we're going to start seeing these for your Susumu Yokosukas. We're going to start seeing these for Ryo Saito. And I'm not wishing it on, it's just reality. You can't beat time. And since 2014, since Shima dropped the Open the Dreamgate at Kobe World 2013, they were in this period where they, instead of having these first-class, first-term wrestlers being the people that the promotion was based around, it was based around the Big Six. It was based around Yamato, Shingo Takagi, Naruki Doi, Masato Yoshino, BB Hulk, and Akira Tozawa. Sometime next year, it's going to just be Doi, Hulk, and Yamato. And Hulk, we've already seen him being cycled down. Doi, for all intents and purposes, other than like dings and occasional like scratches, is in pretty good shape. Who knows how much longer he has, though. And Yamato, it turns 40 next year. So this is a time that the company has to start this transition. And as you said, they've been building it for Shun Skywalker practically since 2016. And the crowd's reacting to it. And you look up and down this card, Eita's the oldest person that's really a big factor in this generation. He's still under the age of 30, but Shun Skywalker, he's not 25. Kento's 20. UT is 26. Kaito Shida is 29. Kaito Shida is 24. Keisuke Okuda, I believe, is 29. So they've been preparing for this moment because eventually you're going to take the training wheels off with these kids. They kind of started loosening them up last year with Benkei. Benkei, another person. He's 29, by the way. They took these off here because it is almost time for the Dragon System and Dragon Gate to have to really rely on these kids just because you can't beat time. And I think in doing so, having this coordination for Shun being not the ace, not being possibly the future ace, I don't know who the future ace would be in 5 years, but that's beside the point. But having Shun Skywalker win this match after everything is built up here, it flags this new era, an era that has been they've been dipping their toes into for a long time. I thought that they were fully committing to it last year, but of course, in retrospect, that wasn't the case. And it's no slight against Ada, but it does seem like that we are going to start seeing wrestlers that were not born when Toriumon started. I mean, SB Kento was born in 2000. UT was a kid going to shows, but it's going to be these guys going forward. And I think it starts at Kobe World on Sunday.
Yeah, it's wrestlers my age. It's nice to see some representation on these cards, Mike. And the last thing that I'll mention here, it was great seeing Eita versus KZ, even if that wasn't a great match, mostly due to the finish, because it was just a match that we had not seen before. We talked earlier on a Rewind and Rewatch Dragon Gate USA podcast that will be out in a few weeks about the only other Eita versus KZ match that there was, and that happened in 2012. Well, if you look at the history of Eita and Shun Skywalker, they wrestled on house shows in 2016 and 2018. You know, those were untelevised. They wrestled on a Prime Zone in 2017. And their first meeting was on a Dragon Gate Next show in 2016. Mike, I just want to read you this card because Mike and I do a lot of talking about, like, oh my God, what if we got Next footage? Like, would that not be the greatest thing? This show, four matches, L. Lindemann versus Hyo Watanabe, Eita versus Shun Skywalker, T-Hawk versus Yuki Yoshioka, and the main event, which isn't as special, Benkei and Yosuke Santamaria versus Punch Tamanaga and Takahiro Yamamura. We would devour this show if this footage somehow popped up.
Oh no, that show sounds amazing. That show sounds amazing. And you talk about that show is very representative of what we have now. It very much is, and it's something that we're going to be seeing more and more as it becomes 2021, 2022, and 2023.
It's just really impressive. You know, when this podcast started, and don't listen to those episodes, oh, you know, start listening to this show from our, you know, honestly, I think I came back full time for Kobe World last year.
Right.
And since then, you know, we did more frequent episodes. And then in March this year, we went to a weekly format, which I'm really, for a number of reasons, glad we did. So I feel like our show's gotten really good over the past year. I'm really happy with our output. But the point is, in 2016, when this show first started, before Mike was even on the show, we talked about the class of 2016 and Benkei and Hyo Watanabe, Shun Skywalker, Katsumi Takashima, and Yuki Yoshioka about how they were the future along with Takahiro Yamamura, T-Hawk, and Yuga Hayashi, a.k.a. L. Lindemann. And they lost. That's the thing with Dragon Gate. They lost essentially an entire generation of guys either retiring due to injury or fleeing to OWE, and the fact that they were able to restock the pond this quickly, it's unbelievable. No other promotion can do this. The constant flow of young talent, and we know of Masahiro Inoue, who's had exhibition matches but has not made his official pro debut, and we know they just accepted another six kids into the dojo, plus we know about more people that are in the dojo. So there's about 10 guys circulating right now. Look, the odds are we're not going to see all 10 of them. Some of those kids are going to leave the dojo, and more power to them. But the fact that there's more and more talent to choose from, it's just unbelievable. And Eita versus Shun Skywalker is the reward. That's the important part. Dragon Gate is being rewarded for investing in young talent, for taking care of them, for protecting them, and putting them in an environment to thrive. And that's what this match is. And that's why this company is the promotion of the year. And I can't even fathom an argument for New Japan. I think All Elite's been great, but I think Dragon Gate's been better. they're in, you know, third place at this point. I mean, my God, what a crapshoot. But maybe Ring of Honor, honestly. But wow. But the fact is, Dragon Gate is being rewarded for this match, and I hope they kill it, and I hope Shun Skywalker begins his Open the Dream Gate run on the right note. And that's what I got, Mike. That's Kobe World.
Just a couple points that you brought up that I kind of want to go a little bit more in. It's not just that they lost like a generation. You know how I love my spreadsheets, and I kind of have people by where I approximate their generation is. It's not just that when L. Lindemann, T-Hawk, and Takahiro Yamamura left, it really took the feed out from this generation that was from basically 2011 through 2015. Then you keep on going back. The Big Six, which I talked about briefly, half of them are already gone. So that's another generation that the time invested did not necessarily pay off. But now you look at it, and it extends past this main event. It extends past Ata at 29, I believe, headlining the show. It goes past Shun Skywalker headlining the show. You got Kento Kobune, SB Kento, 20, just turned 20 this year in the semi-main event. You have UT there as well, born in 1994, 26 years old. Kodama and Nora in the third highest match on the show, a championship match, 21. Then you scroll all the way down to the opener, Keisuke Okuda and Kaito Ishida. Okuda's around 29, Ishida's 24. No other promotion's been able to prepare themselves like this because no other promotion would have the foresight and have the courage to say, this guy is just turned 20. He's not even past his rookie year. We're putting him in the semi-main event. In New Japan, Kento Kobune is still 5 years away from having serious wins. In WWE, he's not even signed because they don't sign people really of his age. Only Dragon Gate and some Joshi promotions, but Joshi promotions operate on a drastically different time frame with people's careers. But only Dragon Gate's able to have the courage to say, we believe in this guy, we prepare him for it, now go knock them dead. Only Dragon Gate is in a realistic expectation that only one out of the four title belts coming out of the show would have an average age above the age of 35. And you do that investment, you have the best training system in the world. There are people who are not Japanese people that travel to Japan, and they're not even booked, but they will travel in Japan just to spend a vacation, spend a break, take time away from work, or just go to train at this dojo. It's that remarkable. And it's even more, and what we're seeing now is at what I argue, and I might be way off base on this, and probably a moment that's as crucial as the change from Toriyama to Dragon Gate and rebounding after Shima and OWE happened. This moment's up there because this all goes to plan. The next 15 years in Dragon Gate, barring some unforeseen catastrophe, drama, or whatever, they're good. You can't say that about any other promotion in the world. And I'm dead convinced of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talk about this every week now. No one's doing what they're doing. They're the best promotion in the world. I think Kobe World is going to be a home run. And, you know, I really hope if anybody's on the fence, again, November is the month to do it. You're running out of time, though. We're halfway through the month now. But it's just, God, there's so much good stuff happening in this promotion right now. It is so exciting to be following this promotion on a week-in, week-out basis.
And it's something, and you know I hate doing this, Case. I'm going to pull out the vet card for a second. I hate doing this, but I need to do this once. So, this is something that it rewards their viewers for your new coming fans. Case watching, we're watching Shun Skywalker in 2016 having a standing match at the end of 2016, but keeping your attention on the promotion and continuously following it, you get something that's as rewarding as Shun Skywalker, most likely prohibitively the favorite of becoming the next Open the Dream Gate champion. And it's worth
it. Oh my God. I mean, if you would have told me when he debuted under that mask that he would be challenging for the Dreamgate title once, let alone at Kobe World, there was no chance. I mean, this guy looked like a walking dinosaur. It was the most bizarre costume I'd ever seen. And for him to, you know, we always thought Skywalker would be like a fun undercard guy who would have the Bravegate belt for a while and would just a fun guy that would stand out in this promotion because he looked so different. And man, when he turned things on, I mean, it was really, I look back really fondly at last year and kind of December in that UT 20-minute draw into the rookie rankings tournament, into that POC match. That's like a 4-month period where I really felt like something was happening. And I talked about it on this show. I talked about it with Alan Forel on his show on the Pro Wrestling Torch podcasting network. It was just, it was the start of something new, and I recognized it then, and it's coming to fruition now, and it's great to see.
Yeah, and it's going to be great to watch this show on Sunday. So, do you have any other big thoughts or takeaways you want to get into before we get out of here?
No, God. I mean, if you're a newer fan listening to this podcast, trying to get a feel for the promotion, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter @_inyourcase. I will do my best to answer whatever questions you have this week. I'll point you to Drengate Network match recommendations if you want those, because it's Kobe World Week, and I get excited, and I want to let people in. I abhor gatekeepers, and I want to bring as many people into this promotion as I can. So I'm on Twitter @_inyourcase. Mike is on Twitter @FujiHeyo with two eyes like Don Fuji, and you can reach both of us and the podcast @OpenVoiceGate on Twitter. Mike, sorry to steal the plugs from you, but I was on a roll.
No, thank you. My voice, as listeners can tell, you know, you drink a La Croix, it goes down your windpipe, and then you spend 10 minutes talking about your theory on generations in wrestling. So I'm glad that you're the one to take care of that. But I think that's going to do it for us. We somehow talked about half an hour on that main event. I don't think anyone else in the world is going to be doing that. So,
I hope not.
I mean, we're pretty sick people. We went sicko mode on the show, but it's Kobe World time, damn it, and we will go sicko mode on Kobe World. And we'll probably go sicko mode next week reviewing this amazing show. Like, I can't wait for it on Sunday. It's the one time a year case that I pull an all-nighter because it's Kobe World. It's my favorite wrestling show of the year. And I can't wait for Sunday.
It's a 3 p.m. Japanese start time, which means it's going to happen at midnight Central time. I'm ecstatic. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, 1 a.m. This show will be probably about 4 hours, I'll guess. I mean, 3.5 to 4 hours. And I will be there every moment of the way. So thank you all for listening. For any of the new coming listeners, thank you for trying this out. Again, as Kay said, you could hit us up on Twitter. That's going to do it here for Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back next week with a review of Kobe Pro Wrestling Festival 2020. So for Case, I'm Mike. Thank you for listening. Take care.